All right, welcome back to the podcast. We're excited to have you here today, and more excited than seeing Kirsten here, which I'm always excited to see her. And I'm always excited to see myself in front of the camera. If you know me, you know that's not true. But we have our state treasurer, Julie Ellsworth, here. Julie, how are you?
I'm doing very well today, and thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited it worked out.
You know what? I have really wanted to get you on this podcast because a lot of people, you know, especially with the whole COVID thing, a lot of people are now politically involved. Doesn't matter where on that spectrum you fell, people are getting involved and they're wanting to understand the process of government. And a lot of people, you talk to them about, well, this, you know, position does this. A lot of people are like, what's the treasurer actually do?
Do you know, that is, I find that fascinating that you ask that because I felt that way when I first was elected to the treasurer as the treasurer 4 years ago. Before then I had served 12 years in the legislature and had worked in leadership there and understood the nuances there. But, you know, the Treasury is the executive branch. And I thought, how do I articulate this to people? So I want to, at the very beginning, give you my website, sto.idaho.gov, because on that, I have made another doodly art presentation on what does state government do. We went through each of the executive offices, and it is fascinating because according to the Constitution, these duties are siloed very specifically to those elected officials that are in our executive branch. So the governor does not have purview over the election process. You know, he can have some say, but it is that process belongs to Secretary of State. And likewise with all the other functions, very significant because the Treasury essentially is the accounts receivable for the state. Money comes into the state in many different manners, you know, through taxes, but also through fees and any place money is coming through. And I always want to laud our founding fathers in the state of Idaho because there's a separation of power between the treasurer and the controller. The treasurer collects the money, and by darn, that controller spends the money all day long. You know? You need a division of power there. And in any large corporation, you'll know that, you know, the entity taking the money should not be the spender of the money. And it is a constant check and balance. Brilliant that they got that at the very beginning of our state constitution. And I noticed that other states that have not had such a clear delineation do try to get that delineation. Now, the governor does not control the flow of money in the state of Idaho because that's my lane, you know, and I do it according to how it's appropriated and how, you know, it's coming in. The governor cannot control those decisions that deal with that because of a treasurer. There are some states that the treasurer is appointed by the governor, and then it becomes ministerial. And it's whatever that constitutional officer is telling you. I see the value of that. And during the COVID situation, you know, that money was coming in and it was intended for the governor. But still, it is money coming into the state. And so it should go through the treasury and it should be distributed in an open format, you know, in accordance with the Constitution and the statutes, those little things, you know,
just little things.
Before Brendan spends it all. Brendan is the controller and he loves to appear with me in places because, you know, I'm collecting money and managing it, investing it so that we're elevating the treasury and Brandon's spending it constantly. Right. But that is important to know, you know, if money is not used right then, it's like an investment banking situation. We're finding places to invest it overnight so that we're earning interest and turning it back to taxpayers. So it takes, it's another benefit for taxpayers with wise management.
And you've actually done some pretty remarkable things in this office. Like you said, you were a state representative, was it 18?
I was in District 18, Southeast Boise.
Representing them as their Republican representative. Representing them as a Republican representative.
It's amazing how that works.
But that was when a Republican could be elected in Boise. And we were no longer encouraged there in Boise. But it's all good. I think there's seasons of life. And at the time that I was serving, I had young children. I actually had my third child while in my second term. You know?
Wow.
So the perspective that I had was a huge contrast to what most of my peers had.
Yeah.
And then to be elected into leadership, I didn't think they'd ever elect a mom. I wouldn't say young. I mean, I looked like I was 12, you know, you know, I'm sure. But I think that if you quietly love to dig in to the Constitution and to statutes, those around you see the merits of your work. And so I was elected into leadership and served there 4 years. And I think my perspective was needed at that time. And then I stayed out for a while. And I, when Ron Crane, who was my chairman when I first joined the legislature, I always tell him that, "Gal, Ron, how long are you going to be in here?" You know, Ron's just wonderful. So when he retired, then I was always interested in the Treasury because my work was the oversight committee of the Treasury. And I'd helped get the bond rating for the state. See, I could talk forever. I love leveraging the power of good management because it lifts Idahoans in every level of government. Local government, trying to bond out for things, state government, school districts. You know, that's the way you should govern.
So the big thing you ran on was transparency in government, right? Yeah. And instead of me jumping to something else, because there's a lot of cool things that you did accomplish.
Yeah.
What do you think was missing? When you looked at the Treasury and you said, you know, there needs to be more transparency, what were you envisioning?
I was envisioning something that lowly Julie Ellsworth could navigate, you know, online and get an understanding of what questions, you know, get answers to the questions that I had at the time. Now, I believe that, you know, there's generational changes. And when I implemented transparency, I wanted it to be that. So that when you navigate a website, you know, you will know, like, I can go and get this report. And if I don't, it's one phone call, you know. I do not think that bad things were ever happening in the Treasury. And I think that the confidence of the public can only be gained when you're transparent. And so as I've put it forward to the public, they think, oh, how wonderful. And I think, it is wonderful. You know, the modernization of the Treasury. Again, I remember, bless my heart, in the 90s, you know, that we gave different ways, the legislative made it permissible to better manage money, which was cutting edge almost in the 90s. But that's helpful to the Idaho voters. And so my goal is to educate on that. And in any interview, I always talk about accounts receivable, accounts payable, because you need to understand the beauty of our Constitution to have those siloed functions. The check and balance is an extremely powerful thing. And to have one massive entity, the Treasurer touches everything in state government because government's about money. Sorry to be so cold-hearted about that. But so my office must balance to the Comptroller's office daily. And there's a lot of flow in and out. I figure there's about $10 million a day that's flowing in and out. And currently I manage $12 billion in assets. So we're trying to find asset managers that manage it in accordance with Idaho law, which is another discussion.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing I do really love and appreciate about Idaho is, you know, in a lot of states, if they have a treasurer, like you said, they're appointed. There doesn't seem to be that, hey, we want to have that clear transparency for people. And in Idaho, I mean, finding out this, I mean, between you and Brandon Wolf, who is our state controller, you guys do a phenomenal job. I mean, he's got the...
Even though he spends all the money.
He spends it all. And I try and get as much as I can from the state when I can. No, I do some work, you know,
here and there. He's doing the transparency on all things.
It's phenomenal. And it's great. Now, another thing with the money you were saying is that you guys find ways to invest it. And then also, if you don't mind me adding, didn't you help us get like a rating we've never had in the state of Idaho?
You know, I'm really proud of that. And actually, harkening back to the 90s, because I was 12 years old when I first served in the legislature. I was so young, you know, and I went with Lydia Justice Edwards. And ironically, I went with Brad Little was also on he was not serving in the legislature at the time, but we went to New York and were part of the sit down with the rating agencies to rate the state of Idaho, and which, of course, dispersed my interest in the Treasury forever, because, you know, there's great value in elevating good management, you know. And So having been elected, there's a Treasurer's Investment Advisory Board that I am a chairman of, but there's also a Credit Rating Enhancement Committee. And I worked to, there are individuals from the legislature that are appointed to that, and then people that are business people that can see what's happening in Idaho. And I worked really hard to elevate that. And in terms of, let's educate what impacts the rating. And I actually realized, you mean I'm paying rating companies? You know, like, well, if I'm paying you, you know, they started to do Zoom calls into groups of legislators and business people and discussed actual concrete items that could hurt your credit rating. Credit rating is extremely important. We have a AAA, the first time in the history of Idaho, but it's extremely important that you don't pass little pieces of legislation that inadvertently can hurt. You know, it creates a risk for the state treasury, and those kind of things do. But by having those rating agencies talk to legislators and always inviting them to have that conversation, I do believe that they have done a supreme job at protecting our credit rating. Important, everything from the state credit rating, everything down from that, they take that as the base, and then you're moved 1 or 2 points depending on what type of risk you have involved. Mm-hmm. So the state credit rating impacts your local government, you know, what they're going to be able to bond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I find it fascinating. Yeah. I do know that my children do not like me to come to Christmas parties because I talk about all this stuff. And you know, like, I find it fascinating because it is a way to elevate the Idaho taxpayers.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Well, it is fascinating. And like I said, you know, a lot of people sit here and they say, what does the state treasurer do? And there's a lot that goes into it that, you know, I myself, unless I looked into this, I wouldn't know. Like the fact that you've actually been able to save taxpayers money.
Mm-hmm. Well,
$13.5 million.
Yes. And I am a chairman of the Idaho Bond Bank Authority, a lot of very professional people. And again, when I talk about, you know, I'm the chairman, you know, I am finding extremely good talent, you know, and that is what I view my role as. But as a chairman of Idaho Bond Bank Authority, if you have different local units of government that have a bonding authority, and that is granted in statute, and so you will know if you have it or not. But things like water districts, you know, drinking water, all these little local units thing. Imagine putting forth a bond issuance to benefit the drinking facilities in your and what kind of rate of return are you going to get when you sell that bond? Because you're just this little guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we do is we bundle a whole bunch of local units together, and then the treasurer's office sells it on the market. Mm. They get a good rate of return. And to that point, we refinanced a lot of debt in the state of Idaho in the last 2 years. And I remember Jerome, Idaho getting $1.3 million in savings. And I thought, Merry Christmas. This is what it is about.
Yeah.
It's leveraging. If you have that saving, you don't have to go pull it out of the taxpayers. You know,
I
find it
awesome.
Very, very full of a lot of experts to accomplish this thing, but it is worth the work. Yeah.
Rewarding.
Yeah. You can tell that you have.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's good.
And you can tell that you have a really good leadership mindset. Just talking to you, because the one thing I've always known, and I've worked, you know, corporations and I've had, you know, teams where I've had 15 supervisors reporting to me and 250 employees under them. And the thing that I always look for with people and putting them in leadership capacity is, are they looking to build themselves up or bring the people up around them? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what's made this podcast so successful is Kirsten and I, we never look for notoriety or anything like that. We're looking for, how do we get the right people to help, lift up, mm-hmm. you know, our state, and also bring the message out and get people involved. And at every turn, we're always trying to look at how can we, you know, get other people involved. So I do appreciate the fact that you're saying, hey, I've got a great team, and a great team is rooted by a great leader recognizing.
I appreciate that. I do ask them to, and again, this is where I get uninvited to Christmas parties. I do ask for, I like organizational charts, bubble charts. Like, I want to know what is the flow of accountability for any dollars that we do. And so I figured that if you're working for me and you can't show it in a bubble chart, I'm not sure if I can talk to you, you know, because you know, they know mm-hmm. when they graph it out. And it's powerful to know that your money is managed because a statute said this. We have these three entities that are overseeing it. We're having these three, you know, and I'm seeing it in a bubble chart. And we have this that you look to for an audit situation. And we have three levels that it's audited at. I want to know that. I want to know that it's not just some random decision by Julie Ellsworth.
Yeah.
So if you want a framed bubble chart of accountability, I good give go. Them. Yeah. I love them. Yeah. I'm, and again, it's all about elevating Idaho taxpayers.
You know? That's awesome.
Yeah.
How big a team do you have down there at the Capitol?
We have about, it fluctuates mm-hmm. because of, but there, I have about 26, 27 employees and I do have the unclaimed property division, which is like the Santa Claus division. And yes.
No kidding.
So I apologize for interrupting. Yeah. I asked you what your zip code was.
Yeah.
I was looking to see if you had unclaimed property that we could get you. You don't.
Oh man.
I know. It's amazing. People can have, unclaimed property needs to be managed and turned back to the people. I want to implement Amazon time, you know, like mm-hmm. a 5-day turnaround. The law provides 90 days. Imagine making a claim and not hearing back for 90 days, you know. So there's an efficiency level that you want there, but there's also, I'm just so impressed with this division because as you challenge them to work on pulling down the days out that you are, they find areas to be more efficient, you know, areas where you can take notes so that if somebody calls later, you know, the notes are there. You know, you've got to make sure that you've pulled in the correct documents so that there's not fraud, and they have a good track record. There are a lot of states that have lawsuits with respect to this unclaimed money, and mm-hmm. Idaho is not one of them because they do follow the, and you know, that sucks up a lot of the unclaimed actually. But yes, we have, you know, what was it about? How much did we returned about $8 million last year. Like, who are these people? And why are you forgetting your money? Well, you would be surprised.
Yeah. 8.7 million.
Yeah. Thank you for looking at my track. You know, but, and it's, sometimes it's an insurance policy that somebody passed and the other family member didn't know to claim on it. It's all those kinds of things, but it does require very close attention to the law.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. So you can imagine what claiming unclaimed property is like, being a military brat traveling around. And, you know, what's funny is I think it took about 6 months after I did an unclaimed one in Colorado. So I worked for a company and later they settled a lawsuit. I didn't know that, but I went and looked and called because I'm like, why do I have money? And they're like, well, there was an unclaimed, you know, lawsuit. Wow. So, long story short, it was like $167.
Yeah, which is worth your time.
Yeah. It was better totally
than the sharp
worth
stick
it.
In the eye. Yeah,
but it took about 6 months before. So I forgot about it, and then I got to check, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Well, that's nice."
Yeah.
So. There. The timing of that, the turnaround. Did you do it through Idaho? Did you do it through Colorado?
I did it through Colorado.
Okay, and now probably since you've done that, there are different ways that we are combining our efforts so that mm-hmm. there's more communication. So that you would probably be notified that of that if you had anything, now that you're an Idaho resident, mm-hmm. that you have anything in the state, in the United States.
Oh, wow.
That's so good. You know, they're just working on all those kind of, the process gets improved upon. But what I find fascinating is how people, you know, game the process. I think, I hear these schemes and I think, that is so creative. You know, how do these people think to do this, you know? And, you know, we have watchdogs and they're catching, good. You know, anybody that games it.
Good.
Well. Can I cancel what I did earlier?
No. Yeah. And no. Actually you can.
So actually I did look at myself and I was like, oh, I've got one and my wife has one and has both of our names on it. Huh. So I went ahead and it was under $25 each. Yeah. Probably going to be two checks for 10 cents each or whatever. But, it's, you know, it's always good to check that, you know, there's a lot of people that I've told about in the past that, hey, you might want to check and make sure that you don't have any unclaimed property in the you talking about
because it sounds like property when actually it's mostly dollars. There are some safe deposit boxes that we maintain, and so the generic term is property that, you know, the nation can agree upon, but it definitely is handled well. I'm impressed with our staff. I'm impressed with their ownership of getting it back to people.
Yeah,
You know, yeah, we want to do better. We want it back in your hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you created a 26% reduction in management fees for Ideal College savings accounts, which has saved account owners close to $1 million.
Yeah, that was, I'm on the 529, basically, mm-hmm. Idaho's 529. And I know that me and another member of the board were asked to do a subcommittee about fees. And you know, it's interesting when you have management companies and stuff, and nobody I'm going to portray as there's no malfeasance here. You know, people are not trying to be bad people.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I want lower rates. You know, that's kind of like me and this other board member. It's like, what can you do to lower? And it really, you know, every time you pay a basis point, you know, that's costing money from the people that are actually, you know, managing the money through this 529 account. And we lowered it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, just because it was really an example of just by asking the questions, you know, to management companies, you know, they could hear the hollowness of their answer.
Yeah.
You know, well, guess what? We want lower rates, you know, and that can be accomplished.
Yeah.
That was a good deal. Yeah. I'm pleased that people can benefit from that.
Yeah. See, and these are kind of the things that I, you know, again, a lot of people just don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting when you hear these things, because I know as a homeowner, as a taxpayer, you know, we're all screaming and ripping out our hair as we look at our tax bills. You know, so when we hear about these savings, it's like, you know, it's almost shocking to hear that it's coming from our treasury, right?
Yeah.
But it's exciting, and it's something that should make us recognize that, hey, it's really important that we have the right person in this position. Now, I have to ask this, okay? You had an opponent, and I think they swapped her out,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes.
And her name
cousin?
Was like,
what is her name? Jill. Her name is still Jill Ellsworth. And I thought, oh my goodness. And she lived about a mile and a half from me, and I'm not related. Oh. I've never met her, but it was Jill Ellsworth running against Julie Ellsworth. And that was awkward. I didn't know how to really approach that. And then they took her name off of the ballot. And then at the end of August, they put another name on.
Yeah.
The real name.
They did that quite a bit this year. Yeah. This election cycle.
Like, oops, yeah. We meant this person for.
But, It almost seemed like to
it
me
coincides
that intentional.
With stuff. Yeah,
it seemed intentional to try and confuse voters.
Oh, the name thing for
you
sure.
You know, and I don't know. I can't diagnose all that. I'm just thinking. You know, I'm just here with my message, but it's not how I would do it.
Mm-hmm. But, right.
You know, like I'm just kind of about being Julie Ellsworth, and I'll fight for certain things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that does beg the question: why is it so important that we keep a conservative Republican as the treasurer? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you want me to talk about this ESG battle I've had.
Yes.
It's a big
and
deal.
You're going to, at the end of this session, you're going to share my doodly art.
We'll actually, if you're cool with it, we'll actually post it. Listen, when it comes to buying or selling a house, this is an important decision. And that's why it's important that you have somebody by your side that you can trust. Somebody who will be honest with you and tell you, hey, even if it doesn't benefit them, they'll say, hey, right now it's not the time to buy. Or, hey, right now it's not the time to sell. You want somebody who will advocate for you and be in your corner. That's why here at What's Happening Idaho, we recommend one realtor, and that is Dominic Brandon with REMAX. Dominic has been a phenomenal supporter of conservative ideology. He's been in the fight. And really, he's dedicated a lot of his time and efforts into helping us.
Absolutely. He was out on the road putting out signs and doing everything from running for PC to, yeah, he's definitely in our corner for Liberty.
Dominic, again, is just a phenomenal guy. He walks the walk. He is PC, as you said. He open carries a REMAX gun when he shows houses, which is great.
Yep.
And he also specializes in bringing people from California to Idaho. He is licensed in both states. And most of his work that he does is referral-based.
No, I love Idaho, and I've been selling real estate for 13 years and licensed in a couple states and got really involved with the conservative movement with a bunch of patriots here, and you guys included, being really important ones in that. But just love the cause, love what you guys are doing, and I'm so grateful I can help you guys get this message out farther to the people of Idaho.
We appreciate it, and we want to support you as well. Dominic, if people want to reach you about buying or selling their home, how can they best contact you?
Best way is to shoot me a text or give me a call at 208-559-5007, and you can hit my personal website also. It's www.idahomove.com, altogether Idaho Move, idahomove.com, to hit me on the web.
Small businesses are the lifeblood of our economy. 2 in every 3 jobs are created by a small business. They support our local schools, charities, churches, and more. This is exactly why we love to help small businesses grow. Our custom-tailored solutions allow all facets of your marketing to work in a symbiotic way, helping you increase revenue. From web design to social media marketing, from local search engine optimization to managing your online reviews, our custom solutions are built for you. Visit us today at silohillweb.com.
This episode is brought to you by Faith Outdoors. Faith Outdoors is more than a gun store. It is an education hub spot. Whether you are a first-time gun buyer, an experienced shooter, or a long-range shooter, Faith Outdoors can help you find what you need to be as efficient as possible. Their staff is some of the most experienced in the Treasure Valley and is made up of retired law enforcement officers and firefighters. Faith Outdoors also is an official dealer of Benchmade knives. Everything sold in store are items they recommend and use out in the field. So go visit them today, 2200 Cortland Place in Nampa, Idaho.
And you know what I love about Mandy and Nate? Their whole family, they're prayer warriors. So if you need prayer, they are happy to pray for you. Just email them at info@faithoutdoorsid.com.
It'll play on this video.
You should do that.
ESG is a relatively new term that many Idahoans may be hearing about and asking, what is it and how does it affect them? ESG stands for Environmental Social Governance. It is a movement to advance public policy agendas through undemocratic means. Investment managers, financial institutions, insurance companies, and rating agencies are examples of those using ESG ratings to look at non-financial or subjective criteria as they measure investment options or the credit worthiness of a company or of a state. So what do the letters in ESG refer to? The E in ESG looks at environmental factors like a company's carbon emissions, green energy initiatives, and air and water pollution. The S in ESG examines social factors and how a company treats people through their policies on things like employee gender and diversity, customer satisfaction, and company's sexual harassment policies. The G in ESG looks at governance and how a company is run by the diversity of its board members, political contributions, executive pay, and who and what they lobby for. On the surface, these factors may look like a good thing. The problem is that they are all subjective. Who decides what is good and what is bad? I wanted to show you a couple of examples that show the impact of these ESG ratings and the impact they are having on companies and why the ratings are not as good as they seem. The first example is from November 2021, when West Virginia led a coalition of officials in 15 states, including Idaho, to act in response to the ongoing and growing economic boycotts of traditional energy production industries by U.S. financial institutions. This was in response to ESG pressures by national environmental groups driving banks, insurance companies, and investment managers to abandon fossil fuels, even though these companies have to meet all environmental laws set by public policy. The second is from Utah, where a utility company, which delivers power to approximately 25,000 customers, recently learned its longtime auto insurer wouldn't renew coverage for their fleet. The utility owns a coal-burning power plant and has stakes in 2 others. The insurance company is phasing out business with companies that derive profits from coal. It is not hard to see how these ESG rating criteria can negatively affect Idaho and our industries. It is important that we protect our state and our businesses. You can find more information on this topic, including my work on ESG, by going to my website, sto.idaho.gov, and clicking on the red banner on the homepage.
Okay, this is what happened about 2 years ago. That's why you need conservative treasurers. Wondering how I should start. Well, 2 years ago, the West Virginia treasurer called me and said, Julie, my state is being shut down. I cannot get financing for my industries here. There's coal, oil and gas, you know, natural resources. And they're just saying they're not going to provide financing. And, you know, I listened to him and I have a lot in common with West Virginia. We have a lot of overlap with the types of constituency that we that we serve. And it didn't take me about a minute to realize they can do that. They can just do that because somebody decided to no longer finance you, even though your financials are in order, you know, your paper, you know, your debit and credit. I mean, you know, they can just arbitrarily do this. And I thought, no way, not over, no. So I signed a letter with him, and we got ultimately 15 other treasurers, a total of 15 treasurers, to sign a letter saying, you know, if you don't want to bank with them, we're thinking you don't want to bank with, it didn't say it that way, you know, but this is me paraphrasing it. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing that you don't want to bank with West Virginia and these industries, and I'm thinking that we don't want to bank with you if you're not going to be supportive of our industries, because it's harmful to my constituency. Okay, so we had 15 treasurers. At that time, I don't know how much money that represented, but I do know that it started something that has really been surprising to me. And also important to note to the folks out here listening, that elected officials that are not under the regulatory arm of government should speak out. And these treasurers are usually quiet because you're not bombastic about the management of money. Mm-hmm. But we suddenly saw that with the election of Joe Biden, they were trying to, and they had expressed it with Janet Yellen's language in the Treasury, that they wanted to put Green New Deal regulatory processes through the investment industry and the banking industry. And I thought, you know, like, I think you should go to Congress and debate that, you know, in a democratic way and see if those are policies that, you know, America wants, instead of coming through the back door. Never appropriate to come in this manner and then have people go and not be able to get financing because they don't look, you know, they don't have the right thing. So thus started this big, huge pushback effort on us. We've engaged in pushing back against the IRS snooping. And some of the things I really like is pushing back against a couple of the appointments of President Biden in the money situation. I mean, the comptroller of currency is a huge position, and his appointment proposal was wholly unacceptable. And you can find out, I could articulate why, but no. And so we pushed back on a couple of appointments, and to this day I look at it and think they did withdraw them, and I was very happy, because if you inadvertently get language into regulatory processes, then people have to live by it, you know, and then, you know, then it just kind of becomes, well, I guess we're okay. And I'm not okay with it. Now we have 27 state treasurers that are joined together, and state of Idaho, I can look at, you know, the big banks, there's what, 6 or 7 of them, like Chase Manhattan, JP Morgan. I can look at you and you look at me and think I'm $12 billion. We don't need Julie Ellsworth, state of Idaho. But I have $3 trillion worth of friends behind me now with these other treasurers. And it has gotten attention. And we have diligently documenting and pushing back on any efforts to put language into our regulatory process. I found that it gave courage to entities that are regulated that can't stand up like me. I can say, over my dead body, and you're not going to be able to shut me down, you know, because I'm an elected official. Who would have thought treasurers needed to implement that way?
Yeah.
You know, but we do. And we are very engaged, and we are tracking all these things. We anticipate that, I mean, it could lead to ultimately, you know, a lawsuit. Like in 2008, Standard & Poor's was sued by several states, and we recouped $1.37 billion. As a settlement agreement. Now that's a settlement, you know. So these things are worth speaking up about. And I recognize when I talk to the general public that, again, you would uninvite me to a Christmas party because it could become very boring. I find it very exciting because it is real.
Yeah.
And it, the intent of it is to hide it from the average grasp of everybody. And so to that point, I made a little doodly art that described what ESG is. It puts the West Virginia situation in there, but it also puts the situation that has happened in Utah, just a few miles away from us, where insurance company is no longer going to insure the fleet of a power industry in their state because they are using coal power. I mean, like, this is so randomly being canceled financially.
Yeah.
It's, and no, we're not going to do that.
And ESG, that's
environmental social governance.
That's what they're doing, using as a credit scoring, right? And
yes,
the CCP.
I understand that it originates in Europe. So it is on those fundamental principles that you just alluded to with CCP. My involvement is focused on that regulatory. And so the credit scoring of an individual, I'm not as focused on because I'm not on the regulatory process for public monies, but very much opposed to put it in writing, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I like regulatory proposals, because they put them in writing and then you can just shoot at them, you know. Yeah. But the real problem with ESG is that they are arbitrary, and people will say, well, this standard existed. And you're like, well, tell me what the standard is. And I do go to all entities that are, I mean, I've had sit downs with business leaders everywhere and asked, you know, what their regulatory entity is doing about it. And, you know, there are efforts and everywhere, you know, in insurance and finance. I mean, there's just efforts to get that to become the platform upon which we always dance. And to me, it's like, can you pay your bills or can you not?
Yeah.
You know, are you in compliance with laws or are you not? And I think it's unacceptable to have this super law on top of it. Last point on this, Standard & Poor's proposed that they would have a special ESG report card as part of our credit rating. Now, I told you earlier how important that credit rating is. And I maintain, okay, they've always looked at environmental factors for our credit rating, all those things that are material to what your risk is in a credit rating. And now Standard & Poor's wants to take just the ones about environmental social governance and pluck them out of that long-held practice and make it a report card on the side. And I say, hey, guess what? Why don't you take people that pay off their debts early and pluck that out of the credit rating and make it, you know, a little side report card? Unacceptable to make these standalone standards. However, I give them credit for actually putting some things in writing, you know?
Yeah.
Very much, we are very much pushing against that. It cannot be the default of our financial industry, you know? And we won't win on everything, but we are engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And you probably just never saw this coming. Like when you, I'm thinking. You know,
first of all, I think it was probably the personality that... that I didn't see it coming. I didn't think that I would have to engage this way, because I enjoy the transparency component and just helping Idahoans. But boy, when that treasurer, it really does go back to when the West Virginia treasurer called me, and I thought, man, these are my constituents. And since then, SEC has put forth regulatory proposals that would make it. Now, the SEC's whole premise, the whole reason why they're created by Congress, is to regulate the financial industry. Mm-hmm. Well, they want to say, well, these Green New Deal regulations that we're doing on the financial industry is going to apply to our downline, too. Well, now you got the farmers, the ranchers, everybody in Idaho that does business with banking. Completely unacceptable. We have a lot of people that are pushing back on that, but I didn't think I'd have to... do it so carefully, but I am very much vested in it. And, you know, if it's on my plate for the time that I serve, I will do it. You know, I think that we may have hope if we see some changes in governance on the federal level, mm-hmm. but it's unacceptable. It's undemocratic to come in through the back door,
yeah,
and to do these things and to come in and stack boards of directors so that you can, you know, skew how businesses function. It's just, you know, it's un-American.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Yeah. And it can happen easily if you're asleep.
Well, I'm glad you're awakened at the wheel.
Yeah. It seems like it'd be good to keep someone who knows what's going on.
Plus, I love the job. I truly love it. And I think that my staff feels that too. And I think it's great staff.
Good.
What was the transition like? Because you came right after Ron Crane.
With Ron, I transitioned, went through every division. It took probably about 9 months to just go through every division and lot of the same people are still there. And, you know, I do remember asking for bubble charts and people thinking, is she a school teacher? And the truth is probably, yeah, but you do understand what you're doing if you can express it. And I just a lot of good, talented, skilled people.
Yeah.
It's great.
Sounds like you have a really good team.
Yeah, I like them.
Nice to have a low turnover rate. I like that. Yeah. There's a lot of turnover everywhere.
Yeah, there really is. So, well, I have two more questions for you. And then whatever questions you may have, Kirsten. First one I want to tackle is knowing how important your role is. Mm-hmm. Knowing how much money you've saved us. I think it's worth investing and making sure you stay in your position. If we want to donate to your campaign or find out more information or contact you, is there a website that we should go to?
Yes, it's ellsworthforidaho.com. And then it's the word for, but, you know, I think you get there no matter what you put in. And Ellsworth for Idaho, just always out there.
Okay.
Perfect. And then I have one more question. And my question has to do with years ago, there was a battle to try and take over your office space and kick you out of the Capitol so that they could, the legislature, who, to remind everybody, is part-time, whereas your office is full-time. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have, I guess, more luxurious offices. I didn't really follow up on what happened with that. Okay. Are you still at the Capitol?
I am on the second floor of the Capitol building. I have a boardroom. And in our interview, we've talked about a lot of the different boards that I interact with. And so we have the place for official boardroom meetings. But most of my operational office is in the Bora building now, which is the old post office just across the street. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm delighted that you asked about that. I think that my having served, I didn't understand what was going on, why you needed more space. The building had just been renovated in 2008, and the Treasury had been there since the beginning of the Capitol with the vault that you cannot move, that is very, you know, highly technical. And ultimately, my side was not, you know, heard in the court per se, and so they could kick you out, but it's always, should you?
Yeah.
Should you do these things? Apparently, they didn't think you should for 120 years in working with every executive branch of government. And you know, I just believe that the growth of government was what I was opposed to. If you build it, you know, will it go full time? And I remember initially being laughed at about, oh, we're not trying to be full time. And then, you know, we've seen some situations where perhaps that's not, I don't feel as comfortable with that answer now. And if you become full time, I think the nature of Idaho politics is completely shifted.
Yeah.
And so there was part of that. And plus it's a, you know, the full time staff was using the space and now it's just being used a quarter of the year or a third of the year. But it's a respect thing to Idaho taxpayers.
Yeah.
You know, it's now they've appropriated money. I think it's $10.9 million to renovate the space for offices. And I know that the legislative budget 2 years ago was increased 28%, I think. And it could be vice versa. It's either 28% 2 years ago or this year. And then this year it's 35.
Yeah.
So it's been increased to 28% jump and a 35% jump. And, you know, that is growth of government. You know, I see needs sometimes in government when you have a growth in population, like for unclaimed property, we need to facilitate the growth in population. But, you know, that was my concern with that.
Yeah. I always look at it this way, right? I have four kids at home. You have a million.
Just a million.
Double eight. Yeah,
eight. You know, once you get over, I think, two or three,
it's like, all good. It's, yeah, whatever.
It's all, it doesn't matter how many you have at that point. But, you know, I know you homeschool, right? And one thing you guys are big on that me who doesn't homeschool, I love to do is I love to take my kids to the Capitol.
Absolutely.
And I love when they ask these questions and they see these big signs say, you know, Lieutenant Governor's Office. Mm-hmm. Maybe that one's not big, but it's on the door, you know, Lieutenant Governor's Office, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Treasurer. When you see all these, right? Mm-hmm. it's cool because the kids are like, well, what do they do? Right.
Yes, it is an educational thing in government. And again, I have that on my website where I made these doodlies about what those executive branch officers do. I am on the second floor with the official placard there. And the treasurer's office is now a museum, is what they did with it. They turned that footprint that is very historic, that has functioned for 120 years, has been turned into a museum about the treasurer. And then the functionality of the treasury is in the board building.
Yeah.
But I love Idaho, and I love the Idaho history, and I encourage you to bring students to the Capitol building and the treasurer's office, whether it's me or it's my assistant in there. We will give you the love of the building, because it's 1910. It's contemporary with Mary Poppins movie.
Yeah.
it just puts, or the Titanic, so all these things that you see in there, just put yourself in that genre and just read the stories about how people absconded with money. I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
I do love the history of it, and I do believe that it belongs to Idaho and these Idaho students. And I think it creates a love for the Constitution. And I hope so. So bring children in. The Treasury always has someone that can, if they don't love it as much as I do, they're pretty close.
That's good. Awesome.
I will bring them in.
You should.
That's great. And then my son is going to be there probably this next year as a page. So that'll be fun.
Oh, Senate for page. The House? Oh, Senate. Mm-hmm.
Which son?
Graydon.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's going to be awesome. That's an awesome experience.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Well, do you have any other questions?
No, but I did hear earlier there's something with Reagan. Tell me.
My husband worked for Ronald Reagan. And could you imagine going back there and when Reagan won? He goes back to D.C. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. He was a solicitor in Reagan's Interior Department. And then Reagan appointed him the U.S. attorney in Idaho for Ronald Reagan. But, there are times and movements in politics, and I do believe that they moved the pendulum at that time. And I think that unless you're always moving it, you may have to really correct a lot. So you stay engaged, and these principles of smaller government, they're real. It's just not rhetoric that politicians say that we need to have smaller government.
Absolutely.
I love it.
I'm glad you came to our Treasure Valley Republican Women's Meeting today.
Thank you.
I think that was really good. I don't think most people knew you or the...
Yeah, I got thrown into having a candidate because George Soros has created one of those PACs against treasurers now. Because look at even those county treasurers. If they can skew those elections like they did as prosecutors, then they can direct more of that money. And, I'm not going to do that. I mean, they do. They literally have created a PAC. I'll send you that information. I just think, this is our battle right now. It's subversive. It's not through the front door in political debate, which I don't mind political debate. I like the rancor of political debate. It's just coming in the back door, coming in all these different ways, and that's our battle. Learn how to fight that battle.
Yeah. Slithering.
Yeah, it's, it's unfortunate that, for me, I've had a pack, I've had a couple packs, and, you spend thousands of dollars on these races, and it's unfortunate that we have to do it,
Yes.
But that's where, if we're going to continue to promote, candidates that believe in smaller government, limited government within, working within its roles, we have to match that finance and energy. Instead of having a conversation, because look, if I was your opponent, right? Let's say I didn't agree with you and I wanted just, big government. If you and me were sitting down and having this conversation where people could hear it, any reasonable person, and I have to say reasonable because there are people who say, nope, you
should put the Green New Deal through there.
Exactly. All these insane things. Any reasonable person would look at this and say, well, I'm going to vote for Julie. This is a no-brainer.
She will not debate me. I know that she refused to debate, but I do know that, money can skew things, as you know. And, it's just, this is our battle now. And so politicians engage and fight back no matter how they bring the battle to you, because it's very, very damaging for our community, for society.
Yeah.
Makes me very sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Julie, I feel hope. I feel great hope. I feel like where people aren't having 4th of July parades, fight to get the permitting for 4th of July parades. Where people aren't allowing a veterans parade, you get on the front line and you make, because if there is a vacuum created, other ideas will fill it. And there's great hope because people are engaged. So be hopeful, but be engaged.
Yeah. We just heard from Brian Allman, and he said on his list of things, he said, start a veteran story hour.
You betcha.
Counter those drag story hours that are ridiculous. You're right. Anytime there's a vacuum, something will come fill it.
And know that, you know, it's okay to, because people will gravitate towards that, you know, mm-hmm. But if we're creating a vacuum, we're responsible for that. And I don't want to be on that end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amen. Yep.
Julie, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure. Again, guys, if you want to find more information or you want to donate to our campaign, Ellsworth for Idaho. And it sounds like either FOR or number 4 will
either
work.
Either way, you're going to get there.
All right, everybody. Good. Thank you for tuning in. Take care.
Thanks. Thank you.
You've been listening to What's Happening Idaho.
Idaho's conservative voice.
It's happening on the right, we're talking about it. And if it's happening on the left, we're laughing about it. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. You can hear the show on every major podcast site and find out more about us at the website at www.idahospodcast.com. See you next time on What's Happening Idaho.